You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, folks, and welcome back to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. It's all O's all the time. I'm your host, Justin McGuire. I'm the former Major League Baseball editor for Sporting News. I'm a former Cy Young and Rookie of the Year voter. And most importantly, I'm a lifelong Orioles fan. Well, guys, it's been a while since we've done an episode of Locked On Orioles, and I apologize for that. I've had a lot of stuff going on in my life. As you guys know, we had a fire back in April, and we were out of our house for 8 months. We had a chance to move back into the house in late December, and we've been in the process of moving back in since then and had a lot of other stuff going on. So it's kind of gotten in the way of things a little bit. But as we get closer to the 2019 season, we're going to be on a more regular schedule, and hopefully we'll be back to our near-daily schedule by the time the season starts in April. All right, well, we have a fun episode for you today as we get ready for spring training. 30 years ago, the Orioles had an infamous incident happen with Billy Ripken in his Fleer baseball card. We're going to talk to author Dave Jamieson about that infamous card. Jamieson is the author of a book called Mint Condition: How Baseball Cards Became an American Obsession. We'll get to that in just a second. Hey, folks, just a reminder. For all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We're joined now by Dave Jamieson, who is the author of a great book called Mint Condition: How Baseball Cards Became an American Obsession. And the reason I asked Dave on was because He wrote in his book about an incident that happened 30 years ago this spring. So we wanted to commemorate the anniversary of what I think is safe to say one of the most infamous moments in Orioles history. I mean, not one of the great moments in Orioles history, but something that happened that a lot of people remember and that I think is kind of a funny thing to look back on. And certainly there's not going to be a lot of fun things to look at for the 2019 Orioles. So let's go back to the spring of 1989 with Dave. Dave, we're talking, of course, about the infamous Billy Ripken card from Fleer in 1989. So for people who maybe aren't familiar with this story, can you just give the basics of what happened here? And keeping in mind that this is a family podcast, so let's not use the actual word if we can avoid it.
Sure. Oh, that was going to be my first question for you. Yeah, so the Billy Ripken error card, as it's known, in the PG name for it is error card, is probably one of the most famous cards in the hobby. Not a famous player necessarily, but a very famous card. And this was a card that had an expletive on it. On the knob of the bat that Billy Ripken was holding in his 89 Fleer photo had an expletive on it, an expletive that starts with the letter F.
Right.
So use your imagination. Right. F*** face was the phrase on it. And when this card appeared, it caused quite a commotion. And it sent Fleer into a real tizzy of trying to stop production of this. And there was not much they could do at that point to get the error out of circulation. But they tried to fix the card by blotting it out. They did a number of different things to cover the expletive. And this became a huge story, a big media story. Actually, it was the first reporter to write on was Tim Kirkchin, who was at the Baltimore Sun at the time, called Fleer, and Fleer didn't even know about it until he called them, wanting to know what was up with this card. But it quickly became probably the most famous error card, where the price kept shooting up. This would have been basically a common, because Billy Ripken, fine utility player, but obviously not an all-star, would have been worth a few cents. But once it was discovered what was on there, the price shot up to $20 and $50, then $100, and eventually it was going for even $300. So it's a really important card, actually, to baseball card history, not just because of the kind of amusing story behind it, but because of when it appeared. This is 1989. This was kind of the peak of the baseball card craze in the late 80s and early 90s, and it really fed into kind of this speculatory frenzy that was going on. And in a lot of ways, in retrospect, looking back at it, it kind of reveals some of the craziness in baseball cards at that time.
Yeah, it really does. When you talk about the price it was going for and that kind of thing, it really is indicative of a time. You know, this is around the same time as the famous Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card and all that kind of stuff. So this is a time when, like you said, baseball card collecting was probably at its peak in terms of national interest and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and one really important piece to the whole Ripken card, and really this is the case with the most famous baseball cards. When you look at something like the Honus Wagner card of the T206 of 1909-1910, that's basically the most valuable card out there. There's a mystery behind the card, right? Nobody knows for sure why there was this limited run of Honus Wagners. And there's a real mystique behind the card because of that, and there's different theories on it. With Ripken, the question was like, how the heck did this happen? A, who wrote that on the bat? B, did Billy Ripken know about it when he held it? C, was Fleer in on it? Were they trying to gin up interest in their cards? D, if they weren't, how is it that nobody caught this? Because if you look at the card, and you know, I'd encourage anyone to go online and Google it, and you'll pull up the various images of it. But it's not exactly tiny. I mean, it seemed your eye's kind of drawn to it. So there was, and a lot of this mystery persisted for about 20 years. It was only about, I think 10 years ago that Billy Ripken actually kind of really gave a full, honest interview on what went down.
Let's give a little bit of background here too. Billy Ripken, of course, was at the time best known as being Cal Ripken's little brother. Cal Ripken Sr.'s son. You know, he was kind of the other Ripken. You know, Cal Ripken is the all-star, the future Hall of Famer, the guy with the consecutive game streak. And Billy Ripken, like you say, he's a second baseman. He's okay. He starts for the Orioles for a while because they're pretty bad at the time, but not a guy who's going to be memorable otherwise. And so this happens, and it's like you said, you Google his name now. This is the thing he's most remembered for. He's gone on to be an analyst for MLB Network, and he played for a fairly long time. But this is kind of his legacy, and it is kind of a funny story because you point out in the book he was known as kind of a prankster, a jokester on the team, and so a lot of people figured, well, he just did this to be funny. But he, at the time, in real time, he claimed somebody else must have done it. He didn't know anything about it. He was embarrassed by it, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think he was probably really overwhelmed at the time. I mean, this became a national story. And as you said, this instantly became kind of what he was most known for. Aside from his lineage there. So I think in the moment he was probably overwhelmed, really wanted this to go away. His story at the time was, I don't know how that got on the bat. I did not know that was on the bat when I held it. And, he expressed, some displeasure at Fleer for not catching it. So there was a lot of mystery there as to who did it, who would have pranked him if Ripken didn't know. What came out two decades later, he did an interview with Darren Rovell on the 20th anniversary of the card, and the story changed, and it started to make a lot more sense. Basically, he said that he had written that it was a BP bat that he had, and to differentiate it, he said, from all the other bats in the locker room, so he could quickly grab it if he needed to, he decided to write something on the knob.
Right.
And for reasons beyond me, anybody, probably even him, that was the phrase he chose. So he wrote it on there, and I don't know if he'd been taken infield or if he'd just had batting practice that day. This was actually in Boston. They were playing the Red Sox for a game but he had his home jersey with him, and he's wearing his home jersey in the photo because Fleer wanted to shoot him there while he was in Boston. And so photographer said, hey, can I grab you now? So he quickly grabbed a bat. He said, without thinking much about it, posed for the photo, and the rest is history. He copped to having put it on there, but he still maintains that he did not know he was carrying that into the photo. And it's a funny story. It's also kind of sad in some ways, to think, Billy Ripken, he played 10, I think maybe even 12 years, in baseball. And, to this day, it's still essentially what he's known for. And I think he gets asked about it, surely on a weekly basis. So it's to be so closely identified with this sort of, kind of goofy, incident involving an expletive, it's funny. And I think it's tinged with a little sadness too.
Yeah. I could tell you from, my experience at Sporting News, one of our reporters was going to be interviewing him, and it was kind of made clear to us, we should not ask about that.
Yeah. And it's also interesting just in the effect this had on Fleer. When I was researching my book, I had talked to someone who'd worked with the company for a long time, and it was owned by the Mustin family. They were really not happy about this. They were, what I was told, it was like a very conservative, small C conservative family. Came from a long line of Quakers, and they were like pretty humiliated about all this, and they hated seeing their name tied to a really nasty expletive. And so from what I could gather, heads really rolled after this happened, and they wanted to know how this could have gone down. And all the indications were that it was an accident that slipped through the cracks through multiple levels of production and proofing. The photographer who took the photo said he did not notice it when he, sent off his images, and as it went through the production process, people just didn't see it. And I'm sure there are conspiracy theories still out there, and people can think maybe Fleer had a hand in it, but the indications were, at least at the top of the organization, they did not know, and they were mortified by it. And the company, the Mustins, ended up selling the company that year. From what I was told, was the whole incident played a role in expediting the sale. So there were some real ramifications to this. And of course, as I said earlier, it also played into kind of all the speculation that was going on in the baseball card industry at the time.
Yeah, you bring up two interesting things there. One is that when you talk about Ripken himself says, I knew that phrase was on the bottom of my bat, but I didn't know that was the bat I had grabbed. One thing I always wondered about with that, and of course, you'll never know, but the fact that it was that the writing was right side up the way he held the ball so that it was easily readable. That sort of leads you to think, well, maybe he did know, and he's just still not come clean on it. Because if you just randomly pick up a bat, the fact that the writing is going to be exactly the way you want it to be, I don't know if that would happen that way. But the other thing, like you said, I mean, who knows? But
now, well, Ripken had also said, later in his later days that, he thought he really blamed Fleer, and he even suggested his own kind of theory, perhaps conspiracy theory. He thought it looked too neat on the card for them not to notice. And he thought it was like maybe even blown up a little bit. He said, I never wrote that clearly in my life. And so, he was insinuating that Fleer did intentionally do something with it.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, the other point I was going to bring up is that that's certainly something, anybody who was around at the time can remember. And certainly since then, I think a lot of people bought into this idea that, oh, yeah, of course they did it on purpose to sell more cards and to create this big thing. But from your reporting and in terms of the company company culture and all that kind of stuff, that just doesn't seem really likely if you look at it.
No, I don't ascribe to that theory at all, personally, just knowing what I learned about the company and who was running it. I mean, that's not to say there couldn't have been something going on in the lower levels, in the production levels. It's possible. But I would guess no, and I would also venture to say that nobody involved, if they could go back and change this, would probably want that on the card. Be it anybody at Fleer, and I doubt Billy Ripken either.
There is some precedent for this sort of thing. You know, you talk about Old Hoss Radbourne, of course, great pitcher of the 19th century and a great Twitterer of the 21st century. But he flipped a bird in a photo like way back in the 19th century, and Billy Martin did something similar. So this isn't the first time something like this slipped through a baseball photo.
Yeah, Billy Martin had, it's a good one. He had kind of like a covert middle finger, I think, down on his leg when he was managing the Tigers. He did that in like an early 70s Topps card. And yes, the Radbourne one is a classic on his old Judge card. So yeah, there is a bit of history there of trying to be naughty when your picture is being taken for the kids' pastime.
Now, you talked about Fleer. Did Fleer itself, or did any of the other companies, Upper Deck, Topps, any of the others, did they maybe look at this and put into place any kind of protections going forward to make sure they weren't a victim of this sort of thing in the future?
That's a good question. I don't know. They've always had their own, proofing systems, and, you know, maybe they ramped it up following this. But, you know, errors, there have been errors, and this is, you know, this is a form of an error. It's an egregious one. But this is in the way that there are mistakes on cards, and the batting average and stats can be wrong and stuff, you know, the information on the back can be wrong. And, you know, sometimes they're airbrushing hats because they had them, you know, they shot them while they were on the wrong team or, you know, before a trade, that sort of thing. So there's always been this like having to deal in the production process with proofing stuff, correcting stuff, fixing stuff. But I wouldn't be surprised if in the wake of that, if companies were being ever more watchful to make sure that didn't happen. Of course, again, on the flip side of that, it surely boosted Fleer sales. When you had a card in there, it was like the Willy Wonka ticket in there with people trying to buying, these are dollar packs or whatever they were at the time, hoping to potentially get a $300 card out of there. I think it certainly ginned up interest in the Fleer set that year. So it's not always a bad thing from the at least in the short term financially to have this sort of goose chase for a strange error card.
Yeah, and do you have any idea like at what point did they? You talked about Tim Kirkchin calling Fleer about this. What point was that? Was that in the spring? The season already started. How early in the run of the cards did that happen?
It was pretty early on. I don't know exactly, you know, sort of which week, but it was in the spring. I think people noticed it pretty quickly. And I mean, I remember I was a kid in 89. I would have been 11 years old growing up in North Jersey. And I mean, this was the big story of the spring. I mean, because at that time, basically at least every boy was collecting baseball cards. And this was just a spectacular story. If you were like 10 or 11 years old, you just wanted to get a peek at this card. You just hope somebody at school might have one. So it really caught fire and it got picked up on very early. And partly why I think Fleer ended up feeding the frenzy a bit in the way they tried to fix this, because they ended up creating so many different corrections to it. You would think they would just fix this by putting, say, a black bar over the knob of the bat in all the subsequent ones that were printed, but it was like they couldn't make up their mind on how to do it. Sometimes it was scribbled out. On a few, it was whited out. On others, there was a black bar. On others, there was a black circle. And, like, these all developed their own names. And, like, you know, like, the dealers and the price guides were, like, having to, like, you know, deal with and make set prices for all the different kinds of Billy Ripken error cards and error corrections, and it just sort of fed into all the frenzy on it. It was a strange response that I never really quite understood.
Right. And of course, there was no way they could just recall the cards that were already out there because they were in random packs and you had no idea where they were.
Right. No, there was no no calling that shot back once they were out there. There was really nothing Fleer could do. Although, you know, I will say people really pursued that card under the assumption that it was very rare, and maybe it was because production was cut off at a certain point, but there was never at that point ever knowing how many cars were being produced in these runs, and whether you're talking about Topps, Fleer, Donruss, whoever, I mean, these companies were printing them like they were money, which they were, and they were never disclosing the volume that they were printing. And so for all of us, the cards were not nearly as scarce as we believed at the time, because they were just printing astronomical numbers of them.
Right, and a lot of them would have been printed before they discovered the error and were out in packs all over the country, presumably.
Absolutely, yes.
All right, well, thanks a lot for joining us, Dave. Again, the book that you wrote is called Mint Condition, How Baseball Cards Became an American Obsession. I highly recommend the book, and if you're interested in knowing a little more about it, I talked to Dave in depth about it for my other podcast, Baseball by the Book, a few months back, so you can check that out as well. So thanks a lot, Dave.
Hey, happy Billy Ripken card anniversary to you. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks. And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.